And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Well, I suggest that perhaps you'd like to get a pencil and paper handy, because there might be some information coming up. We got some announcements here. You might take some notes. And there might be a web page or maybe an address, a phone number, something that, you know, you want to refer to later, because this isn't information. This is not entertainment. Let's start out with announcements. The Trans and or Women's Action Camp is going to have their Bay Area gathering. And this is from the Earth First Newswire. Need a safe space to work on your direct action skills? Want to hang with some awesome folks in the beautiful Calistoga, California area? Been itching to conduct a workshop on issues affecting your community? Well, Trans and or Women's Action Camp, TWAC, Bay Area will be taking place August 18th through the 22nd, 2014, in Calistoga, California. Our camp spot is accessible close to transit by a beautiful river to hold the workshops by. Has tent and house rooming options. The house rooming options are limited, they say. Has glorious trees for us to climb. This is a free, all ages and family friendly event if you are trans and or women identified. TWAC is an action camp for folks who identify as female and or trans, trans women, trans men, gender queer, gender variant, two-spirited, or agender. That's a lot of people. To build community, heal, and strengthen our cultures of resistance, our focuses will be on developing skills for climbing, blockading, flash mobbing, and making art for protest, as well as having safer and mind-expanding workshops and discussions about diversity, anti-oppression, intersectionality, transphobia, transmisogyny, environmental justice, and direct action. We'll also be holding a variety of workshops on car mechanics, do-it-yourself underwear making, consent as queen, playing power chords on the guitar, survivor support, plant identification, frontline solidarity, legal support for direct action or civil disobedience, and much more. There'll be something for everyone. Some of our caucuses will be POC, mixed race parents, trans women, gender sexuality-based violence survivors, dog parents, drinkers, non-drinkers, and any more you'd like to create. To RSVP for this event, notice they don't say exactly where in Calistoga it is, so you're going to have to send them an email. Or if you just want to send them an email, or if you want to inquire about the Trans Women's Action Camp Facebook page, go to twacbayarea@riseup.net. Here's the email address once again, twacbayarea@riseup.net. Once again, their Bay Area Action Camp will be held August 18th through the 22nd in Calistoga, California. Hope everybody has a good time out there. It's probably going to be a little warm. And the Midwest Earth First Climbers Guild Camp has been rescheduled. Yes, it's really going to happen this time. Maybe. August 25th through the 31st, out in the Midwest. In this notice from Earth First Climbers Guild, as found on the Earth First Newswire, and you can always go there if you miss anything here. Go to the Earth First Newswire. Do you recycle? Do you just love Julia Butterfly Hill? Do you like camping in the woods with friends? Do you have a bit of a hero complex? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you're invited to the Earth First Climbers Guild Climb Camp in the Driftless area of northern Wisconsin, August 25th through the 31st. If this all sounds familiar to you, because this event was postponed from its original date in mid-June, where they couldn't have it because their place didn't have it together. Anyway, if you want to learn to ascend and descend a rope, that descending part is actually the most important, learn how to tie knots, set anchors, build and raise platforms and other structures, and to design creative and effective blockades, that's what you're going to learn. You'll also learn about rope physics and other tools that will allow you to be the safest, most badass climber in your affinity group. In order to assist organizers in being as prepared as possible, we are asking people to register in advance. You can find a registration form and more information about the Midwest Earth First Climbers Guild Camp at efclimbers.net/events. That's efclimbers.net/events. And I believe they want you to look for the June event, which get rescheduled. Anyway, if for some reason you still have questions or if you need advice on relationships or cooking or perhaps something else, you can email them, driftlessefcg@gmail.com. That's driftlessefcg@gmail.com. And once again, in northern Wisconsin, August 25th through the 31st, is the Earth First Climbers Guild Climbing Camp. Be there. Or stay on the ground, whatever. Fishkill 2014. Well, there will be no preventative Trinity River water releases this year, announces the Bureau of Reclamation in this story by Hank Sims of the Lost Coast Outpost. In a series of conference calls, the Federal Bureau of Reclamation has informed stakeholders along the Klamath and Trinity Rivers that this year it will abandon its practice of releasing extra Trinity River water in August to prevent a repeat of the 2002 Klamath fish kill. Unless, of course, there is a fish kill, in which case they will release water, I guess, to flush the fish down the river. Anyway. Extreme drought conditions around the state, along with low reservoir levels, mean that there is not enough water in the system to release preventative Trinity flows in order to increase and cool water at the mouth of the Klamath, according to Brian Person, area manager for the Bureau of Reclamation's Northern California Area Office. Instead, the Bureau will monitor river temperatures and fish health at the Klamath's mouth, where migrating salmonids will soon gather before pressing upstream to spawn. My information is that they're already at Blue Creek. If fish start to get ill, he said, the Bureau will release additional cool water into the system in an effort to stop the spread of disease. This is looking at the relative risks within the system and being ready to react, Mr. Person told the outpost. Local tribes and fishing interests are not bound to be pleased. In the past few years, the Bureau has released such water as a matter of course during a period of crisis when salmon are crammed into the lower Klamath's shallow mouth. Mike Orcutt, director of the Hoopa Valley Tribe's fisheries program, told the outpost that it could take as much as 4 days or longer for water to travel between Trinity Lake and the mouth of the Klamath. Plenty of time for the deadly gill rot disease, which flourishes in high water temperatures, to spread and kill plenty of fish. Orcutt further maintained that the Bureau of Reclamation has failed to follow the law when it comes to managing the Trinity's assets. For many months now, he said, the Bureau has continued to ship Trinity water to the Central Valley Project for agricultural uses, despite the fact that everyone knew a severe drought was upon us, and the law states that environmental protection of the Trinity is the first priority in managing the river's assets. The water that might otherwise be used to prevent a fish kill rather than react in case of emergency has already been shipped away. There appears to be no time or avenues available for an appeal of the decision, either legally or politically. Of course, the Bureau has continued to refuse to release the annual 50,000 acre-feet of water due to Humboldt County. The system is pretty dry now. If fish start to die this year, there is sure to be a huge national political firestorm originating out of Requa next month. What's the next step? Orcutt told the outpost when asked. I don't know. Frankly, we're rolling the dice. And here is a press release from the Hoopa Valley Tribe. Secretary of the Interior turns her back on the Klamath River as fish deaths are reported. The Secretary of Interior has rejected calls by Indian tribes, communities, and scientists in the Klamath Basin to release water to protect migrating adult salmon. Just a week after California officials reported salmon deaths in the Klamath Basin, Bureau of Reclamation officials announced that Secretary Jewell has decided to roll the dice. She will continue to divert water to irrigation uses and set aside the senior rights to water under federal and state law for Trinity and Klamath River salmon. Hoopa Valley and Yurok tribes have fisheries on the Klamath River and its largest tributary, the Trinity. Those rights are protected by federal law and held in trust for tribes by the United States. The secretary is betting that if fish start dying, she can make an emergency release of water to provide relief, said Mike Orcutt, Hoopa Valley Tribe Fisheries Director. He added, "But our scientists say that water wouldn't reach the fish for 4.5 days, and once disease appeared in 2002, up to 70,000 adult salmon were dead within days." In prior years, including 2012 and 2013, the secretary released water to create water conditions for a safe migration of salmon. In 2013, Central Valley Project contractors filed suit to block those flow releases. The court rejected their claims the water flowed and there was no fish kill. This year, however, the secretary abandoned this science-based field-tested flow release fish protection measure that is widely recognized as prudent and necessary. It is as if the Secretary of Transportation said, let's forget about automobile seat belts, airbags, and anti-lock brakes and spend the savings on ambulances, said Hoopa Valley Tribe Chairman Daniel Virgil Maston. She added, the problem is that the ambulance may or may not get to the crash scene in time, and when it does arrive, the crew will have to deal with far more serious injuries. Council member Ryan Jackson said, we have made numerous trips to Washington, D.C. and Sacramento, visiting with congressmen, senators, Interior Department officials, White House representatives, and countless staff. We are extremely disappointed in the wide gulf between the administration's statements professing commitment to Indian trust responsibility and respect for Indian tribes, and the federal actions that are taking our trust resources to the brink of destruction. This is no way for a trustee to act. The law of the Trinity River has been set aside by the Secretary's decision. In its place, she has put the risk of catastrophe entirely on us and Trinity Basin communities in order to cater to politically favored interests, said Maston. And here's a press release from the office of Congressman Jared Huffman. He is the congressman for that district. Congressman Jared Huffman, Democrat of San Rafael, released the following statement after the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation announced its decision to withhold water releases on the Trinity River needed to prevent a repeat of the 2002 Klamath fish kill. The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's decision to withhold water releases needed to prevent a repeat of the 2002 fish kill on the lower Klamath River is the latest example of how the federal government fails to plan for drought to the detriment of tribes, fishermen, and the environment. Even now, Bureau of Reclamation continues to divert Trinity water to the mismanaged Sacramento River system and has drained Trinity Reservoir, so there is virtually no water available to protect salmon in the Trinity or Klamath Rivers. By state law, the Trinity River salmon, which begin their upstream migration in the Klamath River, must be protected before water is used to bail out the Central Valley Project. When you find yourself in a hole, you're supposed to stop digging, but the Bureau of Reclamation has dug itself a hole it cannot get out of, and tribes and fishermen may once again pay the price. Prior to the announcement, Representative Huffman had sent a letter calling on the Bureau to immediately address the increasingly hazardous conditions for salmon and steelhead trout in the Klamath and Trinity River watersheds during this drought year. And giant anteaters have killed two hunters in Brazil in this story by Carrie Sheridan from Yahoo News and found on the Earth First Newswire. Giant anteaters in Brazil have killed two hunters in separate incidents, raising concerns about the animals' loss of habitat and the growing risk of dangerous encounters with people, researchers have said. The long-nosed hairy mammals are not typically aggressive towards people and are considered a vulnerable species by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, largely due to deforestation and human settlements that encroach on their territory. However, they have poor vision, and if frightened, they may defend themselves with their front claws that are as long as pocket knives. The case studies of two fatal attacks by giant anteaters were described in the journal Wilderness and Environmental Medicine, which released the paper online this month ahead of its publication. Both were farmers, both were hunting, and were attacked by wounded or cornered animals, lead author Vidal Haddad of the Botucatu School of Medicine in Sao Paulo University told Press. In the first case, a 47-year-old man was hunting with his two sons and his dogs when they came upon a giant anteater in northern Brazil. The hunter did not shoot at the animal, but he approached it with his knife drawn. The anteater stood on its hind legs, grabbed the man with its forelimbs, causing deep puncture wounds in his thighs and upper arms. The hunter bled to death at the scene, said the report, which noted that the encounter happened on August 1, 2012, but had not been described in scientific literature until now. The other case involved a 75-year-old man who died in 2010 when an anteater used its long front claws, which it typically uses to help it dig into anthills, to puncture his femoral arteries located in the groin and thigh. These injuries were very serious, and we have no way of knowing whether it was a defense behavior acquired by the animals, said Haddad. He stressed that such attacks are rare, but said they are important because they show the need for people to give wild animals plenty of space. Giant anteaters are believed to be extinct in Belize, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Uruguay. Some 5,000 exist in the wild and can be found in parts of Central and South America. Their overall numbers have declined by about 30% in the past decade due to habitat loss, roadkill, hunting, wildfires, and burning of sugarcane plantations, according to the IUCN. They range in length from 4 to 7 feet and may weigh as much as 100 pounds. Giant anteaters mainly eat insects, but they also enjoy citrus, fruit, and avocados, according to zookeeper Rebecca Loos, who works with them in captivity at the Reed Park Zoo in Tucson, Arizona. They are animals that can startle quickly. Planes going overhead, chainsaws, and leaf blowers can startle them, she said. The way they defend themselves is by standing up on their rear legs and swinging their front legs from side to side. They have incredible muscular forearms, and those claws are several inches long. Zookeepers generally avoid being in the same space as the animals. They coax them into separate fenced-off areas when they approach their living quarters for cleaning or feeding, she added. Anteater expert Flavia Miranda, who works with the animals in Brazil, said she was concerned that the journal article could cause more woes for a creature that already faces plenty of threats to its livelihood. We have a lot of problems with this species because people believe that they bring bad luck and kill the animal on purpose, she told AFP in an email. But I understand the importance of the article because recently I also had an accident with a giant anteater that almost cost me my life. Turning to news on biological diversity. Threats ranging from fungal disease to habitat destruction and climate change are taking a dangerous toll on our nation's frogs. The semi-permeable skin of tiny Illinois chorus frogs, for example, continued to get doused with pesticides while Cascades frogs are being gobbled up by exotic trout. That's why in July of 2012, the Center for Biological Diversity filed a petition to protect four of the nation's rarest frogs, along with 49 other imperiled amphibians and reptiles under the Endangered Species Act. But more than 2 years later, Fish and Wildlife Service has not yet responded. Help us celebrate, Save the Frog Days was kind of over. But you can continue to encourage the Fish and Wildlife Service to stop delaying life-saving protection. Then learn more about the amphibian and reptile extinction crisis and get your phone ringing ribbits with our free endangered frog and toad ringtones. Go to www.biologicaldiversity.org for those frog and toad ringtones. And protection is still possible for California wolves. There's still hope for wolves in California. The State Fish and Game Commission has declined to rubber stamp a recommendation that the species be denied protection under the state's Endangered Species Act. And it's a step in the right direction. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies petitioned the state for protection of California wolves in 2012, just weeks after the wolf known as OR7 wandered in from Oregon. OR7 and his family continue to make California part of his range, though living in southern Oregon, in what many scientists believe is the first chapter of a new story about wolves returning to the Golden State. But if they're going to come, stay, and recover, they need protection. We hope the California Fish and Game Commission makes the right decision later this year. Commission members certainly saw Californian support for wolf protection at the hearings. The hearing was standing room only as hundreds called on the commission to protect wolves. A big thank you to all who attended or submitted comments, and stay tuned at the biologicaldiversity.org website on how to take more action. Deadly bat disease has now invaded half the country. White nose syndrome, a mysterious disease that killed more than 7 million bats since its New York discovery in late 2006, has struck two new states in its speedy spread across the country, bringing the number of affected states to 25 along with 5 Canadian provinces. Scientists have confirmed the disease's appearance in 3 Michigan counties and 1 county in Wisconsin, which hosts 350 to 500,000 bats in several of the largest hibernating bat colonies in the upper Midwest. The worst wildlife health crisis in recent memory, white nose syndrome, often kills entire bat colonies and has so far struck at 7 different species, including 2 endangered bats and 2 that the Center for Biological Diversity has petitioned to protect: the eastern small-footed bat and the northern long-eared bat, the latter of which has been hit particularly hard and is now being considered for Endangered Species Act safeguards. We've been fighting for years to bring federal funding and attention to the cataclysmic spread of white nose syndrome. It has now reached the last strongholds of the once abundant little brown bat and several other species, said the center's Molly Madison. It's incredibly urgent that we put more resources into finding a cure and saving more bats. Do your part. Don't go caving where there are bats. And the Bureau of Land Management has abandoned its duty to protect public land from a Nevada rancher. It's still going on. After 20 years of inaction, the Bureau of Land Management and other federal agencies on April 5th began removing cows that were being illegally grazed on the Gold Butte allotment in Nevada by rancher Cliven Bundy. But later in the week, armed militia members showed up and the BLM soon backed down, abandoning the roundup and walking away from its responsibility to protect public lands from damage and trespassing. And that standoff is still occurring. 2 decades ago, Bundy stopped paying the Bureau of Land Management to graze on federally public-owned lands, but he continues to feed his cows there. He has racked up $1 million in fees, penalties, and interest that he refuses to pay, and he's also refused to obey 2 court orders obtained by the Bureau of Land Management requiring him to remove his trespassing cattle. His herd, once permitted at 150 animals, now numbers more than 1,000, all of which graze the fragile desert year-round. It's clear that Bundy and his supporters aren't interested in doing what's right for public lands. Now it's time for the Bureau of Land Management to step up and fulfill its duty to protect our natural resources and get those illegal cows off our public lands. They're still out there. And Southwest Fish have won federal protection. The imperiled Zuni bluehead sucker, native only to the Little Colorado River shed in New Mexico and Arizona, has finally earned Endangered Species Act protection due to the Center for Biological Diversity's historic 757 species agreement. The sucker, an 8-inch-long torpedo-shaped fish with a bluish head and black mottled sides, is declining due to water withdrawal from its native streams, logging, grazing, development, climate change-induced drought, and other threats. It was first identified for federal protection back in 1985, and the Center for Biological Diversity petitioned for its protection in 2004, but it languished without safeguards until recently. In 2013, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also proposed to protect 293 stream miles of critical habitat for the fish, which we expect to be finalized this year. This is great news not only for this special arid lands fish, but for the health of the Little Colorado, said the center's Michael Robinson. Protecting the Zuni bluehead sucker will help to protect the river's headwaters from the water withdrawals that played a major role in pushing this fish to the brink of extinction, as well as to guard against new threats, such as development. And sea turtles have been saved from a deadly fishery across 25,000 square miles. In response to a lawsuit filed by the Center and Allies on July 10th, the National Marine Fisheries Service has barred California's swordfish drift gillnet fishery, from operating on 25,000 square plus miles of the Pacific from July 25th through August 31st. The move will prevent endangered loggerhead sea turtles from becoming entangled and drowning in the fishery's mortal snares. The Center for Biological Diversity and other groups sued the Fisheries Service because it hadn't implemented the closure for that swath of ocean, the Pacific Loggerhead Conservation Area, even though it's required to do so for El Niño climate conditions when warm weather draws turtles into the area. Loggerheads enter the conservation area in search of pelagic red crabs to eat, and drowning in gillnets is one of the primary threats to their survival. The nets form vast underwater walls that capture dolphins, seals, sea lions, and even whales, in addition to the loggerhead turtles. And that's all the time we have for environmental news here on the Earth First Update this week. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this Earth First Update, tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, or online at www.freakradio.org. On Monday nights at 9:30, if you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow. 90.3 FM is their new high-power frequency. And if you want to download or listen to a podcast online, please go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. And Earth First Radio would like to ask you to support radioforall.net. They're an independent archiving service that's vital for program archiving and distribution for independent and community radio stations. They also need your help. So when you get to radioforall.net, click on the banner on top and send them some money. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next Thursday evening for another edition of the Earth First Update. And the Earth First Update will be on vacation next week, August 14th.